Hi, I'm Aman.
And I'm Lena.
And this is Grounded Geeks,
where we make the geek world relevant.
Booyah. So, Lena, what are we talking about this week?
We're talking about a movie that it came out a little while ago, kind of around the holidays. On Apple TV. It's called Swan Song. And it seems like not really the type of movie we would cover on this podcast, but it is very futuristic. It involves AI. It involves robots. It involves a lot of human emotions like love and family and all that.
Cloning.
It involves cloning. Yeah.
Driverless cars.
I'll give a quick premise of the movie. So yeah,
go for it.
Also, it's starring Mahershala Ali, and we just will love him and we'll totally cover anything and everything that he's in. So,
sort of, kind of.
He's amazing, Aman. Don't even, okay?
He's amazing, but he's so amazing that we probably won't cover everything that he's ever been in.
Yeah, that's true. So he plays the main character in this movie called Swan Song, which, not actually a fun fact, but this is the very first movie where he has played the lead. Isn't that insane? This it's man has crime. Multiple Oscars, and this is the first time that it's happening. Ridiculous. Anyway, so
That blew my mind. That blows my mind when you tell me that. I'm like, that's some bullshit.
Yeah.
This man is amazing.
Yeah. So this guy, he's some sort of like graphic designer artist dude who does So his character's name is Cameron. And then it shows, there's like scenes showing him meeting his wife, whose name is Poppy, and they have a child together. And then so Cameron finds out that he has cancer. Is it cancer?
A terminal illness. Some kind.
Right. Yeah. I thought they said cancer at some point. I don't remember.
It might have been cancer, but it's something that causes seizures where any one of these seizures could be the thing that kills him.
Right.
So he's kind of a ticking time bomb.
Yeah. And he has not told his wife because some years prior, she lost her twin brother. And it was devastating, where she like locked herself up in her bedroom, would not even interact with him or their son. And it took like a year, I want to say.
Yeah.
For them to be able to like move on from that grief together as a family. And so he doesn't want to do that to his wife again. So he's desperately trying to find some sort of doctor who can provide a treatment, something. So then he finds this lady who was played by Glenn Close, and she's like, we have this amazing new technology where we can clone you, like exact replica. It is literally you. It's your thoughts, your memories, everything will be cloned and put into this other healthy human body that looks exactly like you in every single detail of your body. And essentially, that person will go and live your life, and then you can die in a very peaceful, relatively pain-free manner at this like mountain retreat type place. So the whole movie is basically like, is he going to go through with this? Is he going to actually do this? The only way it can work is that if you never tell anyone who you love or anyone in your life about this, they basically switch with this clone very seamlessly so that no one ever knows that it's not really you. And then, so like this movie, I told you, I was like, we need to do an episode about this movie because it brought up so many questions of like, well, one, this movie was asking, what would you do for love, for the people that you love? What are the sacrifices that you would make? Two, I mean, what is the truth anymore? Does it matter that it's not Cameron 1.0, you know, like original Cameron. Yeah. Does it matter that it's a clone? Does a clone have a soul, even though it has every single other part of him, you know? Yeah. So my mind was blown. I was thinking about this movie for days.
What makes you, you?
Yeah. And we kind of talked about this in our episode about The Matrix, but it's like, if you can't tell the difference, like, does it still make it real? What's real anymore? I'm losing my mind.
So I think if you go back to Descartes' most famous line.
Oh, fuck yeah. Right? Bring in the philosophers. Yes. Okay.
I think, therefore, I am. All right. Mm-hmm. The point of that, the question that he was answering was, how do I know that I am real? All right.
Right.
And he said, if I am thinking, meaning I have some thoughts that I can think about and not share with you, I am real. Mm-hmm. All right. And that is really the only thing we can confirm in terms of reality is the reality of ourselves. All right. So for Cameron, the main character here in Swan Song, he knows he's real. The question is the clone real? However, right. If you get into the mind of Poppy, all right, mm-hmm. the Cameron 1.0 and 2.0 are the same person and are just as real, because the only thing that she can truly confirm for herself is whether she is real.
Right.
All right.
But
so yeah. Mm-hmm. Really the question here about in terms of, you know, are you you, is not from the family's perspective, mm-hmm. of not from Cameron's family's perspective, but from Cameron's perspective, you know, which is, I know I'm real. And if this clone, this perfect clone, in terms of not just a physical clone, but also a mental clone, mm-hmm. all right, is that person actually me? That is then going to be living this life with my family. Is he real in the sense? Is this still me who's there? Mm-hmm. And in a sense, that's kind of the identity question that's going on here. If you put yourself in the mind of Poppy, if she can't tell the difference, then Cameron 2.0 is just as real for her as Cameron 2.0. All right. Yeah. I mean, it comes down to it's kind of a reflection of, you know, Einstein's thing on relativity, you know, where mm-hmm. where speed is measured from the perspective in which you are, from which you are standing, you know,
right.
How fast something is moving is based on what you are deciding is the fixed point at which you are measuring something. And that fixed point in which reality and identity are assessed is different for Cameron than it is for Poppy and their child.
Okay. But I also just kept thinking about the fact that Poppy and her son are being lied to. Right? I mean, also that moral dilemma. There is. Yeah. Like that is, if Poppy were to somehow find out about what all went down.
Right.
Right? Don't you think she would be a little, well, first of all, freaked out and that this technology exists? And two, she would feel betrayed.
Yes. Have you heard, but this is also based on whether she knows or not. Is it, if this is a truly perfect clone and she doesn't know that he's a clone, does it matter?
Well, that's why my question is also like, well, then does the truth matter? You know, I mean, does it matter? I guess, you know, like, sure, I could go around tricking whoever I want. And, you know, and if people can't tell the difference, then who cares? So it's kind of like that whole, like, if a tree falls in a forest and no one's there to hear it, does it actually, you know, what, you know, that whole scenario.
Yeah.
But
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
So, I mean,
I think the movie, though, avoids this headache that we are creating for ourselves by not digging into the question. Mm-hmm. Because the question that the movie then explores is, what are you willing to do for love? Mm-hmm. And what are you willing to, what are the sacrifices that you are willing to make personally for the people you love?
Yeah. Right. I mean, that is what the movie was focusing on, sure.
Yeah.
But there's a bunch of bigger questions that need to be answered. Like,
yeah, like how do they end up with driverless cars? And is this what the fated, what the rumored Apple car is actually going to look like?
Was this basically one big ad for the Apple car, this movie?
I don't know. That's what it looked like to me, because they're going around. He sits in this car that just has four bucket seats facing inwards.
Yeah.
And the car just drives itself and takes you from point A to point B. No human being involved.
Right.
And it's got this bubble, and it looks a lot like the rumored renderings of Apple's Project Titan, I think they call it, for their driverless car.
This was an Apple TV. This was an Apple TV movie, so I wouldn't put it past them to throw in some sort of insane marketing thing for their cars.
Yeah, there were a lot of things in this movie, technology-wise, where I was like, is this genuinely where Apple sees the world heading technologically, mm-hmm. where you have non-physical interfaces for a computer and completely screenless screens that are just light projections into thin air?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he tries to turn on a computer by just kind of doing this gesture while sitting at a desk. Yeah. I was very fascinated by this. Like,
it was
is
cool.
This Apple's vision of the near future? Like, maybe. I would say anywhere between the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, honestly, sure. I could see that. That would be interesting. I'm still hung up on the cloning, though. So I just can't get over it. And it's just, I don't know.
I mean,
because then honestly, if you also look at it from the point of view of religion and all that, like, this is also very, like, you know, anyone religious would be like, Cameron 2.0 doesn't have a soul. What the hell? You know, and like, how can you, because he's man-made, and like, how can you do, we can't create souls and whatever. So,
I mean, this is ironically a question that they kind of touched on in the Foundation series as well. We didn't talk about it in our Foundation episode, but that was something they explored about the clones of Cleon II.
Yeah.
And whether a clone has a soul or not.
Yeah.
And I think there is a very, very deep question here of what is a soul? All right. Mm-hmm. Is an eternal soul a part of you that exists that is not a part of this material realm? Is that a real thing? Mm-hmm. You know, and if it is, what does that mean for the scientific advancements that have been explored in science fiction? Not just cloning in the way that it's done here in Swan Song. All right. Which is, if you can perfectly replicate a person, is that person still, or is that person actually you? But I was also thinking about like the teleporter in Star Trek, where you are broken down to a molecular level, converted into energy. That energy is sent to a different location, all right, where then that energy is converted back into matter and your molecules are reassembled exactly as is. Yeah. So in that moment where you are no longer a physical being and you're completely eliminated, all right, if the soul is real, all right, how is the soul attached to the connected to the material realm? You know, after Cameron dies, would his soul get transported into this clone? Would it then reattach itself to this perfect replica of who he is? You know, And I'm really getting into now, you know, judgment day, you know, religious philosophies here. On the day of judgment, okay, when God is judging every single human soul, is there going to be one soul for Cameron Turner? And will he be judged till the point that Cameron 1.0 died? Or will he be judged at the point that Cameron 2.0 dies?
Or assuming that the soul would just transfer into Cameron 2.0's body once he died.
That's scenario one. Or
are there two Cameron souls? Yeah.
Are there two Cameron souls that will be judged on their own individual trajectories? And how would God deal with that? You know, of like, if you are the exact same person, all right, and let's say that you die at X point in time,
right?
All right. Would you be judged for the decisions that you would have made had you continued living? Which this movie basically makes that an actual thing, you know, decisions that you make after death, had you continued to live. I mean, this is obviously something where we really should have called the Pope to be, you know, to be a guest on this episode, like, to explore this question. Or honestly,
multiple religious scholars from multiple religions, not just the Pope. Yeah. Like, I mean, man.
Lena, I want an answer. Give me the answer now.
I don't have an answer. I mean, I just don't think there's also like, we just quickly jump to the assumption that, oh, we've gotten to a point where humans can perfectly replicate and clone a human in every single aspect and facet of their being, not just physically, but also emotionally, mentally, everything. Okay. But
yeah,
like, I just feel like, can we even ever do that? Or would we always just kind of get maybe a little bit closer, but never quite getting exactly right? There's always going to be a little bit left behind.
The dog knew.
See?
Yeah.
And in that sense, I'm like, you know, I don't think that you can replicate the soul. I don't think you could just clone a soul.
So the biggest barrier to this, to what's portrayed in this movie, technologically speaking, I don't think is the biological aspect of taking DNA and creating a replica out of it.
Yeah.
The biggest barrier, technological barrier, that I thought was the most fictiony of the science fiction aspects of this was having the ability to copy all of the neural pathways, memories, conscious and subconscious in a human mind, and putting that into a new mind.
Right.
The reason for that is because our understanding of the human brain and how it functions is we're so far from really, truly understanding how the human mind works. All right. That one very specific aspect to me is what is furthest out. Right. I mean, with CRISPR technology, we have the ability to alter DNA, all right, quite easily. You can buy a CRISPR kit and do it at home, all right, today, okay? We have cloned sheep, you know? Like, we are very, very close to taking a piece of DNA and replicating the end result of that. That is actually, I would say, that is something that could be accomplished, you know, within our lifetimes, all right?
Weird.
But I don't see us gaining a level of understanding of the human brain that is enough to do what they pulled off in this movie, which is to copy all of your thoughts and experiences and memories and put them into another brain, you know, like our understanding of the human mind is just that far away.
Yeah. It's not like uploading files to a computer. And that's what they kind of treated it like in this movie. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, it might be, but we're not anywhere near an understanding or our ability to do that. But the question that this movie didn't explore that immediately brought up in my mind is a human being the sum of our DNA and our experiences, or are we more than the sum of our parts?
Yeah.
Because if we are more than the sum of our parts, then this is something that couldn't work.
Right.
Because you can get all the parts together exactly as is, and yet something will still be missing to differentiate.
Well, I would say that this movie was kind of exploring that, because that is exactly why Cameron was struggling on making this decision too, you know, I mean, that's I think that's part of the reason why he was hesitating on doing this. You know, he was like going through the process to see how it goes. And then, but it was still up to him, right? To be like, okay, let's do this or let's not. And
yeah,
I think that's part of the reason why Ed, like, I don't know. He's like, I must be more than just my DNA and my body and my memories and thoughts and stuff. And someone must be able to notice. And then when he saw that his family wasn't able to notice besides the dog, then he was like, okay, well, now I'm going to choose my family's happiness over mine. And I'm just going to do this.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like that was part of it, but I interpreted his dilemma more as, but it won't be me with my family.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I think those things are related.
Experiencing it. I think the turning point for him was when his wife said, I don't know if I could live without you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think exactly. that was what came to the head in his decision-making process was him realizing how devastating it really would be for his wife if he died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That would have actually been the thing. Not even having, he found out his wife was pregnant with their second child.
Yeah.
Not even the thought of this child in 7 months is going to be born without a father.
Yeah.
Not even that was enough to really make him commit to being replaced. It was his wife saying, when I heard you fell and hit your head, I don't know if I could live without you.
You know,
I don't know what I would do. That was the thing that made him make the sacrifice of, all right, I will be replaced and sacrifice the remaining time that I have with my family for their sake.
Yeah.
And I think that was really the crux of the question that the movie chose to explore.
Right.
Obviously, as we've discussed, there were so many things that this movie could have gone into.
Right.
And I think they made an active decision not to, though. They touched on it.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
didn't really explore it.
Because these are some of the biggest philosophical questions ever.
Yeah.
So
I would be offended.
Yeah, if they tried to,
a freaking movie maker was like, you have the gall to think you know the answer to this shit. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, exactly.
Who the hell do you think you are?
Yeah, the funniest thing is that I was watching this movie with my husband, and literally the first thing he said after we finished watching it was, so they have all this technology to clone a human perfectly. Why don't they just use this technology to cure cancer?
Oh,
or like cure this disease, you know, like what we can
actually touched on. When did they actually touched on that? They touched on that briefly. He was like, if I had mentioned to my wife earlier that I was having these headaches, she would have made me go into a doctor's office and get scanned, and they would have caught this early enough.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. But I just feel like at this point, when you can completely replicate the human mind and everything, you can find some last minute cure to this terminal disease. Okay. Whatever.
That is, if you think about it, that is the kind of the nature of diseases.
Yeah. No,
every time we find a cure for something, there's something new that comes up that we don't have a cure for.
Yeah.
I mean, 100, 200 years ago, cancer existed, but it was not a typical cause of death because for the most part,
we didn't know about
it. For the most part, people didn't live long enough to start to have cancer regularly, you know?
Yeah. Well, cancer can appear in younger people too. Yeah,
it can. And that's not what I'm not trying to discount that, but the frequency of a disease is also a very large contributing factor to our being able to identify it. So if they have a cure for cancer, new strains of things will pop up because it's like, oh, hey, all of a sudden here's a form of cancer that isn't reacting to the treatments that work. So, you know, this could be one of those new things.
Yeah, fine. I just thought it was really funny. I was like,
it was funny. But yeah. I thought, knowing your husband, I thought he was going to be like, you know, I'm a clone, right?
No. Oh my God.
You know, they replaced me like 2 years ago, right?
No. I immediately was like, would you do this? Like, if this were to happen, like, what would you do? And I was, I don't know. The whole thing just freaks me out. But also, another thing I wanted to point out about this universe in this movie was that I very much enjoy futuristic movies that seem very realistic. Like, obviously there's the types of futuristic stuff like Star Wars, Star Trek, whatever, like, you know, it's like a totally different way of living and obviously on multiple planets, blah, blah, blah. And in this one, obviously you can tell it's in the future because of all this very advanced technology that they have. But the way that they live is still so similar to how we're living now, where, you know, it's like cooking food in the kitchen and like, you know, just like all these small things that make up our lives and stuff. So, and that's another reason why this movie just hit me so hard too. It was very easy to imagine, like you said, you know, like there's a lot of technology going on right now that could be even more advanced all within our lifetime. And the world will look totally different 10, 20, 30 years from now. And, you know, hopefully we will be alive. And so it's just, I don't know. I mean, this movie was way more than I was expecting. I just started watching this movie because I was like, ooh, Mahershala Ali, let's see what this is about. And then I was like, oh my God, I am questioning everything now.
I mean, to piggyback on what you just said, I think that, you know, the best thing that sci-fi can give the audience is to explore the human condition in a situation or an environment that does not exist in our reality, you know, in our time, in our, in the world that we live in, you know, exploring the human condition in a situation that does not exist right now, I think is just the best exercise that science fiction can give us.
Yes. And this is why we do our show.
Yeah, absolutely. On that note, I do want to ask one final question, Lena, before we wrap up this episode.
Yeah.
If you were in the situation of Cameron Turner, the main character of Swan Song, would you go through with it?
I don't know, Aman. This is what I'm struggling with. I genuinely... See, the thing is, if I were on the receiving end of it, if I was Poppy, I'd be livid. Mm-hmm. I would be like, I'm being lied to. This is not fair. Yeah. You know?
But let's say you were on the Cameron Turner end of it.
I know. Then I would really struggle, similar to Cameron. I don't know. I mean, there would have to be some sort of like turning point moment like Cameron had for me to really go through with it. I want to say no. I'm too much of a chicken to...
Even if you had a terminal illness and you knew you were going to die.
The soul thing, like, I don't know. Would you do it?
Yes.
Wow. Okay, then.
Yes, absolutely.
Great.
Absolutely. Wow. I would not want to put my family through the pain and the complication of losing me.
Yeah.
As a member of the family, you know, I would have no doubt in my mind. I'm like, yeah, do it. It would just happen. I would be the easiest client they ever had.
Wow.
There's no doubt in my mind that I would go through something like this to spare my family the pain and the suffering.
Aw. Well, yeah, you also have a child. Like you now are saying this also as a father. So, and I
think I would have said this even before I replicated my DNA.
I think I personally have some sort of obsession with the truth and knowing the truth and like what is real and what is not. And I think younger generations are increasingly like, who cares if you can't tell the difference? Like that's their mentality now.
Yeah.
And something about that just kind of freaks me out. So on a personal level. So
yeah.
So it's like, with this situation, it is I think it's very dependent on you and your values and like what feels, you know, like yeah. there is no well, right or more... wrong necessarily. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
It depends on your intentions behind it. Who are you doing it for? What are you doing it for?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I think therefore I am. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if you think and therefore you are.
Right.
It doesn't matter. I mean, I guess what I'm saying is that, I mean, like,
thank you. Is that a compliment?
No, but I don't know.
If, yeah. Yeah.
Like the point being is that like,
no, I know what you're trying to say. From, yeah.
Yeah. If from my family's perspective, they cannot tell the difference and it spares them the pain of having to deal with my death and not just the emotional pain of it, but the logistical complications that that creates, you know, I would go through with it. It wouldn't cause me any hesitation. I would not hesitate in the slightest.
Yeah.
To spare them that.
I mean, yeah, that's fair.
And as long as they never know about it, that would be the main thing that I cared about, because I would want their reality to remain consistent.
Yeah.
And uninterrupted.
Yeah. And that I think is noble.
I'm glad you think so.
All right. On that note, thank you everyone, as always, for listening to Grounded Geeks.
And catch us next time.